I'm slightly unprepared. The question was, why did they have to go into hiding for the 13th year? I have a note written here, which makes a little bit of sense to me, and I think the way I wrote it, it must have been what Master said. It says, after the 12-year cycle, when the virtuous qualities have been banished from the kingdom, you have to hold on to your divine perception for a while before you can then go back in and do battle. First, you've just been exiled, then you have to go into a samadhi. You have to get strongly anchored in the divine, and then you're ready to fight again. And I think that's how Master explained, you know, sort of what that was about. And that's the best I could say. What was the thought? I had just a second. What was the thought I was thinking there? Oh, it's just sort of like, you know, once you've, once he played the game of dice, once Yudhisthira, like, gambled that far, he went that far, he got that involved in the material world, you know, sometimes we think, oh, I'm so well anchored, you know, I've lived at Ananda now for 5 years, I can just go out and open a center somewhere else, I can just go out and work somewhere else, I don't need to be here anymore, I can gamble with the world. That's what the picture is. I'm strong enough that I can involve myself. Sometimes you even think, oh, I can go help those people. It sort of comes in your mind in lots of different ways. But what happens is you get engaged in a game in which the dice are loaded against you. And you just lose everything. You lose your spiritual consciousness. You lose the clothes on your back. You lose your brothers. You lose your wife. You lose everything. Everything goes away from you because you thought you could handle it. And then you're just bereft, and you have to go do sadhana, you have to start over again, and you have to get firmly anchored in the divine consciousness before you have another chance to really focus in and try to succeed. I mean, that's what the whole story is about here. And all of us, whether you've experienced it over a 12-year cycle or a 2-day cycle, you know, you just sort of have these times where you feel so confident in your divine perception that you move out, you don't meditate as much. It happens with devotees within an ashram that at first you go to all the spiritual events for the inspiration it offers you, and then you feel so inspired you don't go anymore. And then you just stop feeding yourself. You put all this money in the bank, so to speak, of spiritual inspiration, and then you have so much in the bank that you don't remember where you got it, and then you spend it. And then it all runs out and you don't know where it went. You gamble. You play a game with desire, or you become more casual about it. Oh, I used to not eat meat, but now I can. I used to be very strict about not drinking wine, but now I do. You know, I never used to watch television, but now I watch more. You know, just look at all the ways in which just a little you begin to play with it. And then what happens is, can happen, is that all your spiritual aspiration gets banished from the kingdom. Or at least you get weakened. Sometimes it all goes away. I mean, there's just countless stories in all the lives of all the masters, and certainly in the brief history of our life here, people, some are so excited, and then they're gone. Their karma, they just didn't have the karma, it's just people's reality, or they didn't protect the spiritual karma they had. They played dice, the dice were loaded. And then you have to go through this long process, which includes really becoming anchored in spiritual consciousness before you can face your enemy again and win. Okay? That's how Master explained it. Anything else? Other questions?
What did Vidura represent as the principle?
You know, oddly enough, there's no actual definition of Vidura's name given. But he's discrimination, he's wisdom, he's wise advice, he's the calm watcher, he's the inner self that's always watching and observing with dispassion what's actually going on. That's the role he plays. And he's present with the blind mind. The mind is blind, but Vidura is also always there. The mind is completely overcome with his attachment for material desire, represented by his own offspring. The offspring of his blindness is this evil being that he doesn't have the courage to eliminate for his own well-being. But still, Vidura is always with him, isn't he? You know, just that calm, watchful, no matter how deluded Dhritarashtra gets, Vidura is always there. And even when he tries to banish Vidura, and Vidura says, happily, I'll just go off to the side where I really belong. Dhritarashtra can't exist without him. You must come back. And Vidura comes back. Because always a part of us, no matter how deluded we are, there's always that part of us who's just calmly watching and knows. And Vidura, you know, is not even really of royal blood. I mean, he's the son of Vyasa, but it was the serving maid who was his mother. He wasn't even the son of any of the queens. He's just the son of the sage. And so he's a little outside of it all, is what I'm trying to say. His lineage is not quite the same. He's not really trapped in it like everyone else is. He just watches.
What happens to him at the end of the story?
He doesn't get killed, and he's always Krishna's friend. You'll see either tonight or next week, even when Krishna comes to Hastinapura, the only one he's willing to relate to really is Vidura. And Vidura is totally on the side of the Lord, but yet Vidura stays there in Hastinapura because he's the brother of the blind mind. He's the opposite. He's the positive reflection. Yes, the watcher who exists in everything and always knows, even if he's rejected. Good question. Stephanie?
Quick question. You said that the four strongest men in the world, and two of them were Bhima and Kichaka.
Balarama, and I didn't say the other name. It's a name that we don't really know. I mean, it's a story that it's not in my head and is not going to be here because there's too many stories. Okay, I can just find his name just so I can say it. Maybe if I have it. No, I don't think I have it. Oh, no, here it is. Salya is the fourth. I was about to say it right now. That's what I mean, so it didn't mean anything to us. I mean, it's confusing enough. The characters you have to know are sufficient. Sufficient unto the day are the characters thereof, without my throwing in extras that really just don't even last. Don't even try to know this name because you don't need to know it. Okay, are we ready to go on? Do we have any other questions? Pardon me?
Ready.
Okay. Now, in the meantime, Duryodhana knows that this is the 13th year and that these people are in exile, are in hiding somewhere. And so all through these many months, he's had his spies going to every single place that he can think of to go where they might be hidden and trying to find them. But nowhere, they just can't find them. The Pandavas have so disappeared into the spiritual consciousness that the material forces can't even see them. You see? You know, sometimes Master tells that funny story. He makes that funny comment. He said he wrote the poem Samadhi while riding on the New York subway. Back and forth and back and forth. And then he says, they never asked me for my ticket. Then he adds, they never saw me. Now, they just couldn't perceive him. And there's many stories of spiritual people becoming of such a different vibration that they become invisible or can't be seen. There's even a remarkable story. This is very interesting. It's really a diversion. But that story, I think his name is Tom Brown, who's the naturalist who was trained by American Indians and had such an extraordinary ability to relate to the natural environment. There's a story that he tells. He used to play in the piney woods in New Jersey where he grew up. And there was a difficulty in the piney woods is that people would leave abandoned dogs out there. So there were these packs of wild dogs. And the wild dogs were really a danger, and being out in those woods from time to time, they'd have to deal with those dogs, and it would be a real issue for them as boys and even as a man. And he'd been trained by his American Indian mentor to be able to blend into nature, to still his vibration and all these different things, so to not go at too much length because this is so diversionary, such a diversion. At one point, he found himself, and he simply became trapped by the dogs, and he was like at the top of a hill, and the dogs were surrounding him, and he couldn't get away, and he didn't know what he was going to do, and the dogs were coming up to him, and there was nothing for him to do, so he just went into a deep state of meditation. He went into a deep inner state that he'd learned to do, and he essentially lost consciousness of the world. He was so deep in it. When he came out of consciousness, he was still there, and the dogs were gone, and he's an expert tracker, and he read the tracks of the dogs. The dogs were following the scent, racing up the hill, and then just a short distance away, they lost the scent, became totally confused, wandered around in a state of absolute confusion for a while, and then went away. He never left the spot, but he left. And so much so that the animals couldn't find him, even by smell. Isn't that an extraordinary story? So there's something of that in this, because you think, how could Duryodhana not have found them? You know, there they were, all of them in this kingdom. But he couldn't see them because they were in a divine state and he was too gross. He couldn't see them, and even his minions couldn't see them. Isn't that a wonderful thought? You're always safe when you're in the Om. Nothing can touch you if you stay in tune. Nothing can touch you if you're in the divine light. No delusion can touch you. Duryodhana couldn't find them. So the only story that they came back with at all of any note was this thing that had happened to Kichaka. You know, he'd been killed in this incredible way and mangled. And that's when they talked then. They said, you know, there's only, because it was well known, Kichaka is one of the four strongest men in the world. And Bhima's one of the few who could ever have killed him. And we know Balarama didn't do it. We know this other guy didn't do it. Besides that, they have observed that Virata's kingdom has really flourished a lot. So they sort of put all this together and they thought maybe that's where the Pandavas are hiding. So they thought that the 13th year has not elapsed. And one of the conditions was, of course, that if they were in hiding and were discovered, then they had to go back and be exiled for another 12 years. And so that is Duryodhana's intention. He wants to find them in this 13th year, send them back, you know, draw them into another game of dice maybe or whatever, but just send them back. So he decides that he's going to take his army and he's going to attack that kingdom, because this king has never been really nice to them anyway. He's always resisted Duryodhana's force and refused to acknowledge Duryodhana's leadership. So there's an antagonism between them anyway. And so they make up this plan that they're going to attack. And they're going to attack first from the north and then from the south. And then when the armies are all drawn out to one side, then they'll attack from the other side. And they're saying that if the Pandavas are living there, they will be forced, as Kshatriyas, to come out and defend the kingdom against this attack that we're going to launch. So the attack comes, and the word comes to the palace that this Duryodhana's army has come, and he's stealing all the cattle, and he's taking all the people prisoners, and what can happen? And Yudhishthira happens to be in the palace when the word comes, and Yudhishthira says, you know, he also, in his life, Yudhishthira speaking of himself, had learned to be a very good warrior, you know, even though he's mostly just a man of peace, but he's also had this training, and he could help. And then he also says, you know, I've heard that man who's working in your kitchen, you know, he's a very good warrior. And this man who's helping with your cows, and this one over here helping with your horses, they're all very good. He said, why don't we all get together and we'll be happy to help you. So they go out in this battle, and Virata goes out, and he is he's defeated and he's captured. But then these four warriors, who are the four Pandavas, go and they get him loose again. And they're spending the night on the battlefield. They've managed to defeat the Kauravas. Everything seems like it's going well, and before they're going to go back. But they're way out on the battlefield. They don't know what's going on. And then the word comes to the palace, and now all the army and all the men are gone. And Virata, even as when they're attacked, he's bemoaning the fact that, you know, that Kichaka is dead. If my commander-in-chief were still alive, no one would dare have attacked us. This is because we've lost, you know, that great warrior. And he's sort of lamenting he's a little bit angry at this woman, and he's sort of upset about this. And he mutters about the serving maid having the nerve to, resist him and so on. So meanwhile, the city's attacked from the other side. And all the men are gone. And the only man of any age left in town is the king's son, who's a very young man named Uttara, and he's the prince. And he becomes full of bluster, and he starts saying, you know, it doesn't matter that the whole army is gone. I alone have the power. I am the son of mighty warriors. Arjuna himself has nothing on me. I can lead the remnant of our force, and I can win. Single-handedly, I can defeat them. And so he's sort of going around like this, and Draupadi happens to hear, because she's with the queen, and she says, you know, that dancing master who's still here, Brinhala, the eunuch you have there teaching your princess here, you know, I think he also is a very good charioteer. He can sort of, if you let him drive the chariot of this young prince, then I think he will do well. And the queen is very afraid of this woman, and so she says, well, if they say he's good and there's nothing else to do, and they're very frightened in the palace, so they all agree. So this woman comes. She seems like a woman, and she sort of jokes a little bit about she's not quite sure how to put on the armor, and she entertains everyone, and then she finally agrees that he will drive the chariot, and off they go into battle. Now, they get close to the battle, and all of a sudden Uttara sees that this is a huge battle. It's just him and this, you know, dancing master, and all of a sudden he loses all his courage, and he just says, turn the chariot around, I'm just not going to do this. And Arjuna Brinhala says, you can't. You're the son of a great warrior. You said you would do this. You must do it. It doesn't make any difference. I don't care what happens to me. You'll disgrace your household, Arjuna says to him. It doesn't make any difference to me. I don't care about disgrace. And then he gets out of the chariot and tries to run away. And then this Arjuna, with his hair long down his back and wearing sort of the garments of a woman, rushes and grabs him. And meanwhile, the other soldiers are watching this whole sort of little drama going on, and they don't have any idea what's really happening here. And so finally, Arjuna grabs him and he holds him and he says, you will fight. And then he says, but I can help you. He says, I know where some weapons are hidden and we'll go. So then Arjuna goes, and they go to this tree where they've put the weapons, and Arjuna climbs the tree, sends the boy up the tree, and they bring this big bundle down, and Arjuna again is just overcome, and he opens up in this, you know, the power of these weapons, and the prince says, you know, what is this? Who are these? What are these things? He says, you know, these are the weapons of the Pandavas, and I am Arjuna. And Uttara's just, he can't believe what's happened to him. Here he is, you know, he's out on this battle by himself, but Arjuna's with him. He said, we've been hiding in your kingdom, he said, but you must keep my secret. So Arjuna gets his Gandiva, his bow, and they go back in the chariot, and Uttara now has a lot of courage because of all the courage that Arjuna is giving him. And they go out and they do this fight, and of course with him, now Uttara is driving the chariot and he's the one who's wielding the weapons. And of course he defeats the Kaurava army easily, and then he does a magic mantra and all of the defeated soldiers fall into unconsciousness. And now Duryodhana's on the other side. He's not where this is happening, but they take all their clothes because they promised the women that they would bring, Uttara had promised the women in this grand gesture, I will bring back the silk and the jewels, I will defeat the army. So they gather up their arms with silk and jewels of the defeated warriors, and they go back. And then Arjuna sends, I guess Bhima is there and Drona is there, and they look over. Drona looks over and he sees this soldier and he says to Bhishma, he said, that must be Arjuna. And he said, and he's afraid, he said, but he's so openly revealing himself. Duryodhana's fiendish plot has carried through. And Bhishma says, no, he said, Duryodhana miscalculated. He didn't realize that every year that passes, you know, changes the calendar slightly. So it's that the span of 13 years has already passed. He said, and the Pandavas knew that. I mean, it's a question of days, but the Pandavas knew that it had already passed. So Bhishma and Drona just enjoy watching Arjuna rout the people there. And at the very end, Arjuna fires an arrow that goes on either side of Drona's head, and then another arrow that goes by Bhishma's head, and then he fires an arrow that falls at their feet as a tribute. Okay, so then they go back, and Arjuna says to Uttara, the prince, he said, but you must keep my secret. He said, you mustn't tell anyone that I was here. He said, let this victory be yours. And Uttara says, but I can't say that. What can I say? He said, you must keep our secret for another day. So they go back and they put the weapons away and they put them back up in the tree, and then they go back in and Brinhala assumes her eunuch form again and she just sort of drives the chariot in. And meanwhile, King Virata re-enters the city from his battle on the other side, and he hears that his son has gone off to war with the dancing teacher. He's just a boy. No one else is there, and he's just absolutely, totally distressed. And Yudhishthira, who just starts saying things, well, you know, as long as he had the dancing teacher with him, I really don't think it's a problem. And the king is just extremely upset by this. But then the news comes that, in fact, they have been completely victorious. And the king naturally starts saying, you know, my son, my wonderful son, my powerful son, my great son. And every time he says that, Yudhishthira says, yes, the dancing master helped him, no doubt. Brinhala, of course your son managed because he had Brinhala. Finally, the king becomes more and more angry. Why do you keep speaking of this eunuch? It's my son, the powerful warrior. And he becomes so angry, he picks up dice and he throws it at Yudhishthira like that. Stop this talk of this dancing master. It's my son who deserves the honor. And the dice strike him and he begins to bleed. He begins to bleed. Now, Draupadi was in the palace, in the room when that happened, and she grabs a golden dish and she rushes under and she catches the blood like this. And Virata says, what are you bothering about the blood of this man? He's just one of my counselors. What difference does it make? He infuriated me. And she just says, fiercely but quietly, you have no idea. She said, if the blood of this righteous man touched the ground here, for every drop of blood that touches the ground, there would be a full year of famine and drought. She said, I have saved you from this. And so then they hear that Brinhala is back, Arjuna Brinhala is back, and Uttara is back, and Yudhisthira sends the word, keep Brinhala out, because if he comes in his state and sees that Yudhisthira has been made to bleed, his beloved brother has been hurt, his fury will know no bounds. He says, keep him out of the room for at least a few minutes. And Uttara comes in, and he doesn't know what to do, because he knows what really happened, and his father is praising him, and he says, there was a divine being who came and helped me, and now that divine being is gone, but he said he'll come back, and the father keeps trying to give the credit to the son, and the son keeps trying to give the credit to this divine being, and then Arjuna comes in, and he's now playing the meek again. And he sort of tries to catch Yudhisthira's eye so they can just enjoy the joke a little bit. But Yudhisthira keeps his face averted the whole time because he doesn't want him to see what has happened to him. So finally, that night, and Yudhisthira is wise and he knows that the 13 years have elapsed, and that's why he was willing to go out and face Duryodhana, because they're ready now. So they said, now we're going to, and the brothers meet late that night and they see that Yudhisthira has been injured. And Arjuna is enraged and he wants to just kill Virata for the insult that he's offered. And Yudhisthira says, no, give him a chance. He said, tomorrow we will reveal ourselves and we'll see how Virata responds and then we'll decide. So the next day, King Virata comes into his own throne room and he sees Yudhisthira sitting on his throne. He sees his cook sitting next to him. He sees the dancing master over there. He sees the people from his stables here. And he sees this fearsome woman who's caused the death of his commander-in-chief sitting next to him. And he starts to become angry. And then his son is there. And he says, Father, Father, you have no idea. We have been hosting the Pandavas this whole year. And the divine being who helped me was no other a warrior than Arjuna. And then King Virata proves the quality, and he falls at the feet of them. He said, I offer you my kingdom and everything I possess. And he says to Arjuna, he says, I want you, you know, to have my daughter as your wife. And Arjuna says, oh, he said, I've spent this whole year teaching her dancing. It wouldn't be appropriate. He says, but I will accept her for my son. And so she becomes the son of his wife, Abhimanyu, who is Draupadi's son also. And so then the word goes out that to Duryodhana, you know, that the Pandavas are now have declared themselves in Virata's kingdom, 12 years of exile, 1 year of hiding, now it has been done. And Duryodhana still, because, you know, foolish people always keep trying. I'm sure you've seen this in your own life. They just don't really get it. So she sends back word and he says, the 13th year was not over. You know, you have exposed yourself. And Yudhisthira says, ask Bhishma. You know, what the truth of this matter is. And so a great celebration takes place all over the world because people find out that the Pandavas are now free and that the spiritual forces are going to come back into the kingdom. And that's what we'll do next week. Okay. All right.